And now, The Low Post.
Welcome to The Low Post Podcast, where it's time for the fourth edition of nobody's favorite podcast gimmick of 2020. So, where the hell were we in March when the NBA season stopped? And to talk about the Oklahoma City Thunder, there is no other human I would bring on other than our own Royce Young. Sir, how are you?
I'm doing great, Zach. How are you?
I'm hanging in. Hanging in. It's all you can do. Let's talk about the Thunder. You want to talk about the Thunder? You know, we're going to bookend this with a 20 minutes on the Clippers with Kurt Goldsberry. So it's like a Kawhi Leonard, Paul George trade thing revisited, you know?
That should be exciting. And it is a little bit rude of you to bring on somebody far smarter and better looking than me on the back end.
Don't.
It kind of fits. It's like I'm a perfect opening act here.
He's like, don't pump him up enough. He's already like a New York Times bestseller.
I know.
Everyone who's a New York Times bestseller, they basically changed their name legally to New York Times bestseller, and this is my old name. Here's where we left the Thunder. Maybe my favorite stat of the season. There's always like a stat that's very obvious, but when you just put it in black and white terms, it hits you like, whoa. So here's my favorite stat. Since starting 6-11, the Oklahoma City Thunder are 34-13. Would you put those numbers next to each other? 34-13 is like, damn, that team got good.
Third best record in the NBA since Thanksgiving.
Thanksgiving. 6 years ago, Thanksgiving was?
Yeah, that's true. Does that matter?
So here's where we left them off. The Thunder are 40-24 in fifth in the West, 14th on offense, 9th on defense, with a plus 2.5 point differential per game, which is the lowest, perhaps worryingly, among all the strong Western Conference playoff teams. Mm-hmm. Another worry sign, they are 9-17 against teams over 500, which is, again, the worst of that group. However, and this is the thing you just have to start with, they may be, I mean, I didn't do a deep dive on this, Royce, because I don't care that much, but they may be the best clutch regular season team that I can ever remember in NBA history. Do you want to hear some numbers?
I do. I love numbers.
Last 5 minutes and the game is within 5 points. They're 29-13, most wins in the NBA. They rank first in offense, second in defense in those minutes. That's ridiculous. Chris Paul in those minutes, last 5 minutes of close games, is shooting 46 of 86 from the floor. That's
absurd.
Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, quietly, 27 of 47, one of the best clutch players in the league. Dennis Schroeder, part of the three-headed point guard monster, 24 of 47. These dudes can't miss. I literally, in my notebook, wrote LOL next to all of their shooting numbers in crunch time. And so I ask you, as someone who's watched every one of these games, do you look at that and take away the eye test takeaway, which is this team's got something? This team's got some balls, some guts. Or do you veer onto the nerd side where this is all just random luck and it's going to come back to haunt them in the end?
I think you have to fall a little bit, not to completely hedge, but like you got to fall a little bit in the middle on that because, as we know, Zach, there is some level of randomness that happens in clutch games. It's just, you know, rebound that's long that you get, loose ball, call goes your way, whatever. But the Thunder did develop something that was – I don't know if it was just kind of this intrinsic confidence in themselves, if that was kind of Chris Paul and his floor generalship, where he's just so calm, collected, and in control of the game. You know, as we know, the stats have always bore this out with Chris Paul, is that he just wins possessions. He engineers winning possessions. And when you can do that in the final 5 minutes of a game, it can win you games. And they kind of discovered this three-point guard lineup that opened a lot of doors, unlocked a lot of things for them in terms of clutch offense. And they were able to match up with people and not get beat up. That was the concern, Zach, is that they were going to be too little and they were going to get beat up and teams were going to expose them defensively. And that just didn't happen. And a lot of that, credit to Dennis Schroeder, he's had his best defensive season in that regard. So to answer the question, I think that there is something to it. I think that they've proved it too much for there not to be something to it. I think one of the things is that, you know, I don't know if you said you didn't do a deep dive, but they've scored a lot of those points in the mid-range. You know, Chris Paul's mid-range shooting is ridiculous. Schroeder's a good mid-range shooter. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander has kind of a mid-range floater. And it's kind of this weird dichotomy that you know, throughout the 48 minutes, teams, they want you to take mid-range shots. They want you to take non-paint twos. That's the whole point of analytics, is that you're going to win the math game at some point. But in those final 5 minutes, the math kind of goes out the door a little bit, and it's about just getting the best possible shot you can get. And teams are still out there kind of giving the Thunder these mid-range shots. They're just super capable of knocking them down.
So they're, I don't think they're 29-13 good, because nobody is. Like, the Globetrotters aren't even that good. I guess the Globetrotters probably are that good. But they're an outlier. They're what we call in the statistical. They don't get a lot of crunch. They're what we call in the statistical community an anomaly. Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
But there are reasons to think that the Thunder are actually a good clutch team. Number one, one of the legacies of Chris Paul, and I can't wait. I was going to say, I can't wait till he retires so I can write a story about his career. That sounds bad, but I think he's had a fascinating career, and that he is a part of two of the worst meltdowns in NBA playoff history. Yeah. One of which you probably saw in Oklahoma City in 2014. And then the next year against the Rockets, when the Clippers just inexplicably barfed all over themselves. And then Josh Smith barfed in some threes, and Corey Brewer barfed in some threes, and they lost that series. But over his career, and maybe that's all that matters. Maybe the people who say the regular season doesn't matter are right, whatever. But over the course of his career, his teams have been consistently the best crunch time teams in the NBA, or among the very best. And you look at why. Well, A, great mid-range shooter. Mm-hmm. B, smart, low turnover player, right? And so the Thunder have that going for them. If you look at their crunch time stats, like you said, they're not shooting like an outrageous percentage from anywhere. They're just a good mid-range shooting team making mid-range shots. They're also number one in free throws, free throw rate, and number one in free throws allowed in crunch time. The fewest. Now, crunch time free throw numbers are mess up because teams foul on purpose, this and that. But zoom out for the whole season, they're top five in both of those categories for the season. And they're a low turnover team, like every Chris Paul team is for the season. So the things they do in the run of play are sustaining into, are the things that are driving their crunch time success. And that makes me optimistic that, yeah, maybe 29-13 is ridiculous, but this is engineered to be a good crunch time team.
Yeah, and that's kind of just the way that they've seen themselves, Zach, is that they're just sort of this professional team. And that's the way that they want to play. This has sort of been the fantasy of Sam Presti for a long time, is to sort of have this type of team where it's sort of Spurs-esque, it's well-run, well-organized, and they play together, they share the ball, and you're kind of seeing that play out, and so much of that is driven by Chris Paul, obviously. There's a lot of other people that deserve credit, but, you know, I think that when you look at Chris Paul's season kind of as a whole, you rewind back to August when the trade happens, and it was a question of if he even wanted to come to Oklahoma City. Then he quickly invested himself. And now he's basically reestablished himself as one of the, I don't know where you'd put him, top 20, top 25 best players in the league.
Spoiler alert right now, he's going to make second team All-NBA on my ballot. He's still an elite, he's still a borderline all-defense level player on that end of the floor. He was absolutely phenomenal top to bottom the entire season. So let's just talk about that now. Let's say the Thunder lose in the first round or win a series and get rolled by one of the LA teams. And we can talk about how they project in the playoffs for a second, but I think big picture, one of the most common questions that I bat back and forth with people around the league is, what is this team going to do in the summer? Because if you look at the West right now, as things stand now, all 15 teams in the conference are going to walk into next season thinking, we can make the playoffs, or we're trying to make the playoffs. We're on an upswing. No one is tanking. Mm-hmm. Even the Wolves are like, we got D'Lo and Kat. We traded our pick. We got to make the playoffs. Phoenix, blah, 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 on and on. There are a couple pivot teams, right, who can zoom into that tanking spot. And the best time to tank is when there's a vacuum in the tankery. And the Thunder have an obvious trade chip in Chris Paul that, you know, they could make a net neutral trade for it at the very least. Gallinari is a free agent. So everyone is curious, do they want to do that, or have they acquired so many extra picks from the Clippers and the Heat, notably, that they can just say, you know what, if we stay good or decent this whole time, like we can do what the Celtics did. We don't really have to tank. We own all these other picks. Chances are maybe one of them is going to hit at some point. Where do you think Sam Presti's head is at?
You know, I think that it's more likely that they do go into kind of the strategic repositioning, as they might like to call it.
Of course. So I apologize for my inappropriate language.
Yeah, but no, I do think that I think it's more likely that they do tank, and I think they're honestly, Zach, I think the current state of affairs may have something to do with that, just in terms of the finances. They may need to really kind of get the books set right, you know, with being a small market team and revenues where they're at. You know, even if they looked at this team right now and they said, okay, look, Danilo Gallinari, let's bring it back and let's go at it another season. We like this team. It was fun. It was good for the fan base. Building was full again. That's a smart move to just kind of keep it going. They may just look at it and say, look, we just can't pay Danilo Gallinari. And that's just a fact of life, and he's just going to have to walk. So I think that may play a factor to some degree. I think the biggest hook to this whole thing is just what does happen with Chris Paul. He's going to have 2 years left on his deal, and he's a difficult player to trade. There's a lot of people that believe that the Thunder would have to incentivize a trade. I can tell you the Thunder aren't going to do that. They're more willing to let Chris Paul play out his contract than they are to incentivize.
Well, what you just said, that's the leverage that comes with owning all of those picks, is they can say, you know what, we don't have a huge degree of urgency to get crappy. Like, we're not going to make a crappy deal just for the sake of getting crappy. Right. We can hold on to Chris and be okay. I agree with you. I think if I had to guess, not reporting anything, if I had to guess, if they got a fair deal for Chris Paul, even like a neutral deal, like they're not going to get the mother load for Chris Paul, I think they get off of him and go into rebuild mode, just because, again, it has to be a deal that gives them something. But that, you know, I just think Sam is a calculated, cold, analytical type. Cold, I don't mean that in a bad way. Just like he knows what the probabilities are of how to build a championship team. And if he can get a good deal and go to more toward the bottom. Remember, they almost traded Gallinari at the deadline to Miami.
Yeah.
They got
They would have. It's the same type of situation, Zach, if they had gotten the deal, but they just weren't willing to just jump in both feet just for the sake of doing it. They had a good team. They felt like they still maintained some leverage. And so you're exactly right about Chris Paul. If they got the right kind of deal, they'd move off of Chris Paul, and that would basically be the eject button at that point. That's when you start talking about Steven Adams. That's when you start talking about Dennis Schroeder. Shea Gilgeous-Alexander is probably, you know, a player that you're not offering up because he's part of the building block.
Hell
of the future.
No! I will storm. What is it? The Chesapeake? Is it still the Chesapeake Energy Arena? I will storm the Chesapeake Energy Arena and practice facility if they trade Shea Gilgeous-Alexander. I don't want to talk too much about the future because this is a damn fun team. They may not be the most aesthetically pleasing team, although Shea's got that little zigzaggy hesitation, long arms, weird change of pace stuff going. But they're fun and they're tough as hell. And where we left them, I believe, before the postponed game, was in Boston. They just like robbed the bank and got out of Boston, like a free throw rebound. Chris Paul stole it from like four different people. Then they scored. It was just like a classic Thunder, just bank robbery kind of win. And just, I remember when Chris Paul got that rebound, I turned to Hollinger, who was behind me, and we just started laughing. And I looked at him, I said, this little mother is just doing stuff like this every game. And I do think they're going to be a tough out. Now, what I wonder, and why I don't think anyone's afraid of them, and afraid is a strong word. Like, teams aren't afraid of a lot of teams. I do think there's a fair question of, like, does this team have another gear? Is there a higher ceiling to reach? Because I think they pretty much maximized their rotation. There's not a lineup hiding in plain sight that they can play more. I mean, they've leaned pretty hard into that triple point guard lineup you've suggested. Mm-hmm. They're not, again, 14th in offense, 8th in defense. They're not like a team that's like strikes you as they have another thing to hit on offense. That there's just I think that's part of the reason why teams may not fear them, but they're going to be a tough out.
Yeah, and you know, again, I think it goes back to just the, especially when you look at it in the context of the Orlando restart, Zach, that the way that they're just kind of structured, I view them as the team maybe in the of the of the eight likely playoff teams that has the fewest questions. Even the Lakers have some questions with Rondo's injury now, Avery Bradley not there. The Clippers have a few questions to them. The Thunder really kind of are as is. Like, they're just sort of the biggest question that they maybe have now, it just kind of surfaced, is that Dennis Schroeder's wife is due in 3 or 4 weeks, and so he said he's going to leave the bubble. That would put him probably missing the eight regular season games that they're going to play, but probably back, assuming he decides to come back, for the postseason. So that would be kind of a question mark that they have, but there's just not a lot of variance to the way that they play. They're pretty stable. They don't really ride a wave of like, oh man, their high is really high, but their low can be kind of low. They're a pretty flatline team. And I look, and like you said, I think that that's a very positive thing in terms of just the style of play and the structure in which they win games. But it also, it gives you a reason to pause in talking about their ceiling when it comes to the postseason. They're not waiting to tap into something where you go, look out. They could hit a level. You know, Scott Van Pelt also said, how good is your good? We've seen the Thunder's good. Like, we've seen how good their good is. And it's pretty good, but it's nowhere close to great. And I think that that's kind of where they sit. I do think it gives them advantages going into this. And I think that they believe that they could be pretty successful in this postseason just based on the way it's set up, that they may not have to ride this momentum tilt back and forth, that they could just show up and play pretty good ball and maybe be able to steal four games from a couple teams.
Yeah, anyone 3-6 can win a round. The Thunder are one of lots of teams who really, really, really do not want to fall to 7, because that three-point guard lineup gets a lot tougher to play when you're facing a giant team on the wing like the Clippers, who are just, aside from being giant, are just awesome, and you shouldn't want to play them.
They just match up with anybody, too. They're just...
To that point, that lineup, so their best lineup is Paul, Gilgeous Alexander, Dennis Schroeder, Gallo, and Adams. That's plus 126 for the season.
It's a ridiculous lineup.
Yeah, it's a great lineup. And Gallo staying healthy was just a big part of their season. I mean, Gallo's a really, really good player. We all know that. He's a borderline all-star when he's healthy. He just hasn't stayed healthy that much. The rest of their team overall is plus 157. So they're essentially net neutral 500-ish, and then they have one lineup that kicks the crap out of people. So if they meet a matchup where that lineup can't kick the crap out of people, or is that some sort of structural disadvantage, that's going to be an issue. I have a couple of questions for you. Number one, is Robertson going to play?
It sure sounds like it, and you know, there's some really positive signs coming out of practices. He's practiced in every one of them so far, which is a huge step forward, Zach. You know, if you think back to beginning of the season where he himself, the day before training camp started, said he was full go, and then the first practice happens and he doesn't practice in it, so he was not full go. And he struggled to ever stay on the court, really couldn't get to a point where he was doing contact stuff. He's doing contact stuff. Players are talking about how good he looks. It's one of those things of when you haven't played an NBA game in 30 months. It's been 30 months, 2.5 years since Andre Robertson's played in a game. You kind of have to sit there and say, I'll believe it when I see it. But it's trending in a direction where it certainly looks like not only is he going to be available to play, but they're talking as if he's going to be part of a possible rotation.
Well, I see a why not opportunity for him in that I would guess that they keep Dort in the starting five as the three. But the opportunity I see for Robertson is backup power forward, because that's been Darius Bazley for most of the season. Then he got injured. I mean, he's a rookie. I think Darius Bazley has a nice feel for the game. He's got a chance to be a good rotation player. He's not right now. No, very few rookies are. When he got hurt, they just sort of cobbled together, you know, an Abdel Nader minutes here or there, going a little smaller with Hamadou Diallo. Like, to me, Robertson has played some small ball four before. He actually has more big man skills on offense than perimeter skills. It's not close. That's an opportunity I could see for him. And that was my follow-up question, is like, what are they going to do when Gallinari is on the bench? What do you think is their best sort of plan for those minutes?
Yeah, I think that's a great point. And also just in terms of where Robertson is physically, I think it probably makes sense for him to scale up to playing some four. I don't want to call him a stretch four, because he's certainly not – the stretch element does not exist in his game there. But he's kind of that – you know, you can put the ball in his hands. You can run him as a pick and roll guy. You can hit him with a pocket pass. He's a good cutter, smart player. He's a smart offensive player. He just lacks some necessary skills to be
one big one.
One critical one there. But then again, if you listen to them, he's been working a lot on his shooting. You know, that's what everybody always says when you're hurt. You're working on that. But yeah, I think that could be where he fits in a little bit, because they are deeper in the backcourt, and it doesn't make, you know, you got Terrence Ferguson, who's a very inconsistent player, but he's a capable defender. Dort has been sort of a revelation for them at shooting guard, playing the three, playing guarding bigger players.
Dort's good.
Yeah,
Dort's good.
16-5 with him.
Dort's going to stick in the NBA if he can ever figure out if he can become a league average 3-point shooter, because he has a little off the bounce, like pump and go juice to his game. It's not the most nimble, but it works well enough, and he is an absolute brick house on defense. You cannot, like, I'm not sure Joel Embiid can move that dude, let alone like a guard.
He's like a fullback. I mean, he's like a Nebraska 1990s fullback, and he just bulldozes his way to the rim. He's a great slasher. He was really good in college. You know, a lot of people kind of were surprised, Zach, as I'm sure you heard, were surprised that he got out of the first round, and then, you know, then he ends up undrafted altogether. So I think that they feel like they've kind of got something in Dort. And so they don't want to compromise giving him an opportunity. And I don't know that Roberson really fits this style of team. Roberson fit as a 2/3 in the Paul George, Kevin Durant type of led teams. That was where Roberson fit a little more specifically. I think he fits a little bit more, naturally as a backup four right now.
Free marketing idea for the Thunder. Maybe it's only for 40 and up people, but the famous Simpsons episode where they go to Itchy and Scratchy Land, and Bart is astonished that there's a mini vanity license plate for Bort, but not Bart. And then there's a woman in the store who's like, Bort, my son is also named Bort. Dort mini license plates. Everybody in Oklahoma City is going to buy a Dort mini license plate. Send 10% of the profits to me. We'll call it a deal.
That's a high level reference right there, Zach.
Thank you. No one under 40 will get it, but you know what? I don't care. I'm getting old. I'm going to embrace it. That's fine. Get off my lawn. What's really interesting about the Thunder, by the way, is they're one of these teams. I always like when we get one of these teams where the team that they are on offense, the shots that they take on offense are the shots that they're trying to get teams to take on defense. So they're really good at taking away the rim and threes and forcing mid-range shots. Mm-hmm. And on offense, they take more mid-range shots than almost anybody. I always like the Spurs have been like that in some seasons. I always like when you get a team like that. And with this particular team, it doesn't strike me as stupid. Like, sometimes it strikes me as stupid. Like, hey, look what you're doing on defense. What the hell are you doing on offense? You're doing the opposite. With this team, it strikes me, it hits me like you mentioned before, they really know who they are. They're confident in their identity. They know exactly what they're trying to be on both ends of the floor. And that sounds like a simple thing. A lot of NBA teams don't get to that point where you just know everyone on the floor, like, I know who we are. I'm comfortable with what we do.
Yeah, I mean, and just look at recent Thunder teams. They had no idea who they were. And they lacked such a clear identity that it drove people insane. They could see, you know, the previous Thunder teams, Zach, were the exact opposite of this one. Those highs of that team, how good was their good, was sometimes really, really good. But the variance level that they had was infuriating. And the inconsistency element was just kind of baffling to a large degree. This team is the opposite. They're just consistent. They're stable. They know who they are. You know, a lot of people will dig into kind of the mid-range element and how that's a low efficiency shot and that's not a good play. And one of the things Billy Donovan will repeat often is that he'll acknowledge that. He's very much in the analytical game, but he puts the qualifier on it about, well, that's when you look at the kind of the totality of the numbers. When you dumb it down to who's taking those mid-range shots and how capable they are and their own personal analytics, you can kind of change your perspective on it a little bit. So they've got guys taking mid-range shots that are extremely good at it. And again, in today's NBA, a lot of teams are kind of giving them those shots. And so Thunder are more than willing to take them because, look, they're not a high-level three-point shooting team. They're not like a great transition team. They've kind of got to manufacture points in certain ways, and they understand that that's kind of through ball movement. You know, they're not necessarily like this, like whip it around, like watch the ball fly over the court type of team, but they move, they space, they do things to kind of try to, you know, catch, you know, attack a guy off of a closeout, reposition, kick the ball, move it again. That's sort of their style. And they just, like you said, they just know who they are, and they're really not trying to play above their heads at all.
to your point, they're 28th in assist rate, which is really interesting because we've been talking about how many point guards they play, and they play one of the best passing point guards of all time, and they're 28th in assist rate, which gets to their sort of deliberateness. They pass with a purpose. They don't overpass. They're just a really interesting team. They could absolutely win a round. I mean, I think it's going to be matchup dependent. Utah without Bogdanovich, like, that's a winnable matchup. I'm not sure who I would pick, but that's a winnable matchup. And then these other teams, I mean, you know, I hate to say it. We're going to have to see how some of these guys recover from the coronavirus, because not everybody recovers at the same rate. Not everyone gets their conditioning at the same rate. But if everyone were healthy, I would not pick them against Denver. I would not pick them against Houston. And I would probably not pick them against Dallas. But they got a shot in all those series. And the last thing I will leave you with is, obviously, these games, there's not going to be any home court, not going to be any fans, all that. So it would be a little less fun than it would be with fans. But are you rooting for the Houston matchup, the Harden-Westbrook reunion?
Of course. I mean, that'd be just great drama. We need some drama in Orlando, and I think that's clear-cut, concise, simple, easy-to-understand drama right there. Russ playing against his old team. James. People forget that's James's old team. I don't know. People don't forget that, do they?
No, they don't.
No, they definitely don't forget that. It's just been a minute. It's a little more direct that it's Russell Westbrook's old team. But, yeah, I think – and plus, that's just an interesting matchup in terms of the small ball element. The Thunder could kind of go quasi-small with Gallinari at the five, but they're not a team that could – I don't know. The Thunder's strength is playing with Steven Adams and a little more traditional. I say traditional with three-point guards. But, like, that kind of matchup – tactical element would be pretty interesting, I think.
Yeah, I mean, part of Houston's strategy is when we face a lot of teams, not every team, like not the Clippers, but when we face a lot of teams, if you have to take your center off the floor, it's not just you're taking your center off the floor, it's you're taking one of your five best players off the floor, and that immediately helps the Rockets just to get the quality of play down. Anyway,
you think,
really?
I was going to say, Zach, do you think that Russell Westbrook will guard Steven Adams in that situation, and then they would actually have to fight for rebounds on opposing teams? It would be pretty good element right there.
Now I'm rooting for this matchup. Not until right now was I rooting for this matchup. Well, Russ has guarded some centers. I mean, you laugh, but they've had Russ guard center. I mean, they'll switch here and there. More than that, other teams have had their centers guard Russ here and there and just sort of lay back at the rim and say, come at me. And he'll go at them because it's Russell Westbrook. He wants to hammer it on your ass. Well, now I'm very excited. Okay, Royce Young, he does great work for ESPN on all things Thunder and NBA. It's good to see you. It's good to see your face. Be safe. Best to your family. And I hope to see you down the road.
You bet, Zach. Same to you, man.
All right, let's welcome in Dr. Kirk Goldsberry. Are you a doctor? Can I call you a doctor?
You can. I technically am a doctor, but please don't call me that, Zach. Please.
When I was a high school teacher, I just thought it was funny to go by Dr. Lowe, even though I wasn't a doctor. And so I tried to convince my students that I was Dr. Lowe. I also told an elaborate story about how Rob Lowe was my cousin. And I knew Rob Lowe, and Rob Lowe like had weird habits at Thanksgiving dinner. And I don't think any of them believe. I had a few buyers, but not that many people believed it. Kirk Goldsberry, let's talk about. So where the hell were we? The Los Angeles Clippers, 44-20, second in the West, plus 6.5 points a game, which is mighty nice considering various loads were managed to various degrees throughout the season. Third in offense and fifth in defense, which is interesting because I'm not sure. They don't seem like just an elite offensive powerhouse, and yet that's what they were, particularly when they had their star players on the floor. They were my pick to win the NBA championship at the moment they signed Kawhi Leonard and acquired Paul George. They remain my pick to win the NBA championship. They have a stylistic flexibility that I don't think any other team in the league can match. We can talk about some of the lineups that have barely played that I think could be part of their rotation. Mr. Goldsberry, what is interesting to you about where we left off the Clippers? I can't remember if you picked them to win the title. And are there, I guess what I'm zooming out, are there any holes you can poke? Is there anything that worries you about this team?
They're a pretty, pretty sound team, Zach, for the reasons you point out. You read the Dean Oliver scriptures like I do. The first thing I look at is the offensive indicators and the defensive indicators, and they are both very good. I think they're one of two teams with a top five offense and defense, the other one being the Lakers. When you talk to people around the league, they're quick to say maybe they're a little small up front. Maybe they're a little small up front. Maybe Zubats and Harrell aren't Tim Duncan and David Robinson when it comes to rim protection. But when you look at the stats, they are literally the best rim protection team in the Western Conference. They give up the fewest shots in the restricted area in the Western Conference, just barely fewer than Rudy Gobert's Utah Jazz. So how's that for rim protection? So I don't see many.
That was almost a Fizdale moment right there. You almost see, you got very close to take that for data. Data or data? What did you say? Data? Take that for data.
I was a member of the opposing team. That was the Grizzlies Spurs playoff series when Clipper Kawhi Leonard was, you know, really coming into his own as a superstar in that series. And Fiz coached a heck of a series. So, yeah, as the data guy on the other team, I believe he said, take that for data. And, man, he coached a really good series that time. But that's a story for another time. I don't see many holes, Zach, to answer your question. Like you said, great two-way team, a lot of versatility, a fantastic bench. I don't see a lot of holes. A good coach.
You brought up when I think and when people around the league think about the Clippers, if forced to pinpoint maybe a small little of doubt, they go two places. Number one is center, where you just went. I think that's been answered. I think Harrell is probably going to win Sixth Man of the Year. Is he giving up size and rebounding against some centers? Sure. Does that really make me all that anxious overall? No. And Zubats is just flat good. Zubats mm-hmm. is a good player. He is, when you look at field goal percentage allowed around the basket, he's third in the entire NBA behind only Giannis and Brooke Lopez, aka the Bucks. So, and Zubats is a really good pick and roll man. Kawhi Leonard loves to play with him. They have a great chemistry. Zubats is good. Question answered, done. Ivica Zubats is a good NBA player. Do I want to play him 30 minutes in game 7 against the Lakers? No, but he's a good player. And the other place, the one that's actually more interesting to me to think about is there are some people who might argue they're like 10% short on ball handling and like kind of north-south zip. And it sounds ridiculous to say that because they have Kawhi Leonard, who's incredible. And they have Paul George, who is something like the 10th best player in the NBA. But Paul George's handle comes and goes. Like he's not a first option. We know that now. His handle comes and goes. He can be turnover prone. The Clippers have a higher turnover rate when he plays without Kawhi, I think by a lot. And just as an example, a lineup that I really like for them, particularly if they were ahead late in a game, is Beverly, George, Leonard, Morris, Harrell. That lineup's only played 11 minutes, by the way, which is what I'm talking about, lineups that have barely played. That's not a ton of, like, again, maybe it's not a problem, but we're picking the nits. And even last year, Kawhi had two really good ball handlers at the guard position around him a lot in Van Vliet and Lowry. The solve for that is slide Lou Williams in there. You take a hit on defense. Does any of this worry you, or is this just like we've all been spoiled by the perfect Golden State teams and this is just nothing?
Yeah, I think it does. I mean, the traditional point guard can be important bringing the ball up on defense as well. Pat Beverly's a great defender. Lou Williams is a great offensive guy, but they have weaknesses on the other ends of the court. So it doesn't really worry me, but it's something to bring up. And look, the bubble is a really uncertain environment. And I think if somebody like Lou Williams were to get hurt or Patrick Beverly, it really limits their ball handling. It really does then put Paul George in an uncomfortable spot or Kawhi Leonard in an uncomfortable spot. So look, if we're talking about potential injuries as one of your biggest flaws, you're in a great position. I think we keep coming back to that, Zach. The other thing you said earlier, I think, is really what makes this team especially dangerous is they can play so many different lineups, so many different ways. When Montrez and Lou come in halfway through that first quarter, and if they get going, Doc Rivers has a very good luxury to just stick with that. And you can't stop those two guys, so we're just going to keep going with that. If you can, okay, now go stop Paul George and Kawhi Leonard playing ISO or playing dribble handoff. That is what makes me most excited about this Clippers team. You mentioned they haven't played a lot of minutes together with those new lineups, especially with Marcus Morris. But, you know, I trust they'll figure that out. I just think their biggest strength is the ability to watch a game and react to it and throw a different lineup in there. And this is a team we might see close with a different five-man group in different series or even different games within a series. And I think that's a really strong part of their championship run.
That lineup I mentioned with Lou Williams in, so Williams, George, Leonard, Morris, Harrell, that's only played 12 minutes. Their starting lineup has only played 124 minutes, and it's plus a lot in 124 minutes. They've played Jamichael Green at center. Okay. They've played super big lineups with Leonard, George, Jamichael Green, and a center. Those have killed it. They just barely scratched the surface in that Lakers game toward the end of the pre-suspension season of a look I wonder if we might ever see again with Marcus Morris at center, because they have so much perimeter talent. Like, we haven't even mentioned Landry Shamet. He's good. We haven't mentioned Reggie Jackson. He's fine. He plays here and there. He was part of their rotation. Maybe against Houston, that becomes a lineup that you see. And they can kind of out-Houston Houston, or you know what I mean? They can play fast. They actually rank higher in pace than I thought. They're top 10 in pace. And they're built to play slow half-court basketball. If they're healthy, I think that is their single biggest asset. They can just be a chameleon. They can play any size, any style, any way you want.
Yeah, I agree. And I think, you know, normally when some of these new teams come together, you know, you think back to the first year of the Heat, and they just never coalesced. And you saw that in the statistical indicators, too. You know, one of the things that gives me confidence in Doc and this group is that despite never playing together, despite Paul missing a lot of time early, their statistical indicators have been solid all year. They've been able to do it. Their record is, I think, fourth or fifth best in the league. So, you know, you could fairly challenge, well, will they coalesce in the bubble? Maybe, maybe not. But from what we've seen all season long, the proof is definitely that they can. And in addition to that, Zach, in that game you mentioned, their one loss against the Lakers, remember, they beat them on Christmas. They beat them early in the season. They lost right before we shut down. Avery Bradley had six threes. I think he was the Lakers' third best player in that game. He's not going to be there. The Lakers are showing up with a bunch of question marks that they didn't have. So if you're looking at their path to the championship, one of their main foes is showing up a little questionable themselves in the Lakers. And I do think one, the other thing you said that I really love is, you know, people don't realize the different number of bigs that Doc Rivers has access to. You didn't even talk about Patrick Patterson. Jamichael Green.
Green's good. He might not even play in some series, and he's good.
Or he could be a stretch five in a game against the Rockets. We don't know. I just think that this team is built for the playoffs and versatility in ways that no other team in the West is.
I'll tell you one thing they like about Jamichael Green. Now, this is maybe going to sound stupid, but I can tell you they like that he guards Anthony Davis decently. They've watched those head-to-head matchups, and they're like, all right, you know, look, no one can guard Anthony Davis. It's Anthony freaking Davis. But, like, this guy gives us a fighting chance to do it with 20% less help than otherwise. I mean, that's just – if that matchup happens, Lakers-Clippers, I think Jamichael Green has a role maybe in that series more than in some other series. And you mentioned they were 7-1 to finish the season with the one loss against the Lakers. And it was – it was a hellacious 7-1. I mean, destroyed Memphis, destroyed Denver. I mean, destroyed by 29. Destroyed the Thunder on the road. Destroyed the Houston. Destroyed the Rockets on the road in what was a big showcase game when we were at the Sloan Conference. Everybody wanted to watch that game. I just mauled these teams before, and they looked like a team that not only was playing really well, but that was coming together. Like, you could see Doc trying some more sophisticated things on defense, some switches, some rotations that were kind of coming into play. And they looked like a team like, okay, they're gearing up now. And I don't think Look, it's impossible to tell who does this help, who does this hurt, who's healthy, who's this. It's like, people ask about this. I'm like, what? We're in the middle of a freaking pandemic. Like, what do you want? I have no analysis for this. But what they've said about Kawhi Leonard is, you know, this guy is always like, we have to plot so carefully to get him to June. And even by game six of the finals last year, he was letting other guys run the show and kind of dragging a little bit. Well, now he's had 4 months off. He's reportedly in great shape. Paul George was nicked up. Now he's healthy. Their home court advantage is, let's be polite and say, less intimidating than some of the other top teams in the league. They come as close as I can think of, other than the Lakers, because they have the best player, to profiling as a team that can get into this environment and be like, all right, we can do this.
I don't even remember who I picked to come out of the West. It's been that long, and we've had some other stories in the media that have distracted me from thinking about the beginning of the season and our predictions back then. But I do remember I expected the Clippers and Lakers to be playing in the Western Conference Finals together. And I do think that one thing we can look at authoritatively and say, well, the Lakers would have had a huge home court advantage in that series, not only in their home games, but their quote-unquote road games in Staples Center with – yeah. Throw the Clippers court down there. Come on. That's still, you know, that's a Lakers building. And that's gone now. And so I do think we can say, well, it's kind of a neutral site. So that there goes one of the Lakers' advantages. And I keep coming back to it. I just think this team is the best, most versatile two-way team in the Western Conference, Zach. I think they can beat you several different ways with several different players having big nights one game to the next. And it's terrifying.
Well, let's be clear. Like, we both love this team. I picked them to win the championship. I don't like. So we're saying nice things about them. They are not unbeatable by any means. They are in a tier with the Lakers and the Bucks, who are incredible teams. The Bucks on a historic pace. The Lakers with the best tandem in the NBA. Either of those teams could beat the Clippers. Like, let's be clear about that. I just happen to like the Clippers a hair more than those other teams. But they're not unbeatable. They do have weak spots. And more than that, those teams are awesome. But I do think those three teams are in a tier of their own. I would be absolutely blown away if anyone else in the West beat the Clippers, provided the Clippers stay healthy. Like, blown away. And then I think the next teams below them that are sort of like puncher's chance kind of teams, I think are all in the East. I think Boston, Toronto, and the apex version of Philly, and everybody knows I can't quit Philly. Can't quit Philly. Not giving up the dream. Philly, I can't quit Philly. Houston is the one that maybe belongs in that conversation. Yeah. It's just a team with a wild upside. But Denver, Utah, OKC, even Dallas, I think those East teams are better. So I just think Milwaukee, LA are their first – the first tier, and again, I just happen to like the Clippers, but those two other teams, I mean, you've been on the Bucks for a long time. I think you picked the Bucks to win the title. Obviously, nobody would be surprised if they did that. They're amazing.
Well, it's a simple bet. I mean, if you look at their path, they're going to get there. I'm no Bob Bulgaris, but I think they're going to come out of the East relatively to their opponents. They have a much easier path than either of the teams in the West. Here's the issue in the West. There's a team, you said they killed the Thunder, and the Thunder were playing so good then. Oh man, I fell in love with the Thunder. I know you're talking to Royce about the Thunder, but that's a team I got my eye on in that second tier in the West. And then playing the Rockets, you have no idea what's going to happen. It's kind of like spinning a roulette wheel. You have no idea. If they go 17 of 35 from 3-1 game, you're going to lose. And that's just how they approach the game. And that brings a lot of stress to a lot of coaches. I know, okay, Daryl Morey and Mike D'Antoni and James Harden just bring randomness into the NBA playoffs. Russell Westbrook brings energy. I would not want to see the Houston Rockets in the first round if I'm the LA Clippers. Then they might, depending on what happens in these seeding games. That's a real possibility, and I kind of want to see that. I'm still taking the Clippers. That said, yeah, I think the East is pretty locked up, although Nick Nurse and the Toronto Raptors deserve more respect than they're getting right now. I'm taking the Bucks coming out of the East and probably the Clippers coming out of the West.
I can't remember if I mentioned Boston, but they're in that tier as well. Yeah. But I agree. I've been on the Raptors all year. I think the Raptors are legitimate. I think what I've said about the Bucks is someone is going to push them hard in the East. I'm going to pick the Bucks to come out of the East, but I don't think it's going to be the cakewalk that their numbers suggest it'll be. I think they're going to be in a high leverage game 6 or maybe even a high leverage game 7 against one of these teams.
Well, my favorite thing you wrote this year was about Bam. And I wrote on ESPN after staring at the
numbers.
You
did.
I think that if I'm the Milwaukee coaching staff or the front office, I'm terrified of the Miami Heat in the second round. Do you think, Zach, that Bam can do a little bit of what Kawhi did last year to Giannis or no?
I think Bam is top 3 option in the NBA to guard Giannis. And I actually was watching some film of Bam, the Heat yesterday for a piece I'm working on for tomorrow. And like the guy just moves his feet so well. In fact, I watched film specifically of Bam versus the Heat, or Bam versus the Bucks, and like he's tailor made for that matchup. My thing with Miami is I'm just not sure they have enough juice on offense to beat the Bucks 4 times. I'm not sure that they have enough of an upside. Like the Rockets, we know have a huge upside. Like that's what we're talking about. I'm not sure Miami has that, but yeah, they have the goods, and they have played. You know, they won in Milwaukee earlier this year, and if there was a moment that put Bam on the map, it was his chase down block at the end of that game. And they've played him tough, so it's interesting. But there was something I wanted to, the other thing about the Clippers is, you look at how they've played on offense this season, they are 14th in three-point percentage, 20th in three-point accuracy from the corners, 17th in shooting at the rim, 16th on long twos. It just feels like, as good as their offense has been, if they hit shots, they have a little bit of an uptick to get to, because they're a better shooting team than that. I was surprised when I looked at those numbers.
In their rotation, will have more Paul George in it, and it'll have more Marcus Morris, I think, if he shows up to the bubble as we expect him to in the coming days. But yeah, I think the Marcus Morris addition gives you the corners that maybe you didn't get, assuming Landry Shamet's able to contribute. I'm not worried about their three-point shooting, although that is a fair thing to bring up. Again, this is a top 5 offense during the regular season. And look, let's talk about matchups in a potential Lakers series for a second. Is there any pair of guys you'd rather throw at LeBron James in the NBA than Paul George and Kawhi Leonard? I mean, it's just a great pair of guys to throw at him. And oh, by the way, Marcus Morris. So I think they just are really tailor-made for that Lakers matchup. And again, it might come down to Anthony Davis versus Paul George, or Anthony Davis's ability to attack Montrezl Harrell or Zubats in the paint. But I really like the way this Clippers team matches up against what I expect to be their toughest foe in the Western Conference.
It does. It sinks in how unique they are, and how unique the Lakers are too. With the LeBron Davis duo starting at 3-4 and the big wing duo of Kawhi and Paul George. It sinks in when you're looking at other teams and you're thinking of how they can defend the best teams in the NBA. And the team that pops into my head is a Dallas. I was looking at Dallas stuff. Okay, they have Dorian Finney-Smith. Dorian Finney-Smith is going to guard whoever is the best player on the other team, 2, 3, or 4. And then you start to think, well, if they face another team that has a really good 2, 3, or 4, then they're in trouble because it's Luka or it's probably Tim Hardaway Jr., and that's a problem. And then you start looking at the teams like, there really ain't a lot of teams that can do anything about this. It doesn't really matter. And then you get the Clippers and the Lakers, like, oh, now it matters. And it just, this is why you go all in on these kinds of players, these 6'8 and above, or 6'7, 6'6 and above wing players, because they're hard to find. If you get two that can score and score over and through people, you're just a problem. That's it.
Yeah, and I always said those rim protection numbers, going back to like the secret sauce for their defense from a shot chart perspective, is how are they keeping these guys away from the paint? And I like to your point about the wing strength. Rim protection in an era dominated by James Harden, Giannis Antetokounmpo, LeBron James, and these attacking wings, rim protection really starts on the perimeter. And the fact that they have these massive wing bodies that could guard anybody, multiple positions, and they have 3 of them, if you count Marcus Morris. And oh, by the way, Patrick Beverley's pretty good at stopping point guards. Man, they're stopping that rim attack before it even happens. And that is a really powerful skill. So it doesn't really matter that Harrell and Zubats are not exactly Duncan and Robinson in the paint. Those days are gone. You know, Mark Eaton isn't walking through that door. We're not going to see a giant center come and dominate. Maybe Joel Embiid or somebody like that. But I think they're so well positioned for the way we're playing the game right now and the way the superstars are dominating the game right now, especially on defense.
Well, I hope we get to see it through its fruition, and I hope everyone stays healthy and safe, because they're a really good team. They're a really good team, and the Lakers are really good, and that would be a hell of a series, with apologies to everyone else in the West. But Mr. Goldsberry, you can read his stuff. You just wrote a piece this week. Was it 8 or 10? There was some amount of X factors. 8,
I don't remember. I think it was 8. And then I'm writing about the Sixers next week, so stay tuned for that. I cannot quit them either. There's always a chance.
Oh, my God. You're writing about the Sixers?
Yeah, there's always a chance. What has to happen, Zach, for them?
Can we just drop our plans right now and do 2 straight hours on whatever you're writing about the Sixers? Because I can't wait. I'm that excited about it.
Hey, stay tuned next week. I'm going to be
Shake
diving into
Milton.
That.
How many times is the word shake going to be in your column? I'm all in. Let's go.
All right, dude. We're there.
Mr. Goldsberry, thank you for your time. Stay safe. Best to your family. And I will see you in person, hopefully, at some point before 2022.
Sounds good. Stay safe yourself, my man.